Welcome to You Decide 2023, the race for Jacksonville mayor. This is a special edition of Jacksonville's Morning News on 104.5 WOKV. Live from the Farrah and Farrah Performance Studio, here's Rich Jones and April Davis.
We have a lot of weighty issues, and we have a lot of ground to cover, so there is no sense wasting any time. Welcome into the Farrah and Farrah Performance Studio. I'm Rich Jones, alongside my colleague and friend April Davis. Stephen Ponson will be along with some of your questions as well. Donna Deegan, Daniel Davis are here in studio. You should know him by now, but I'm really interested in knowing, like, what's the one thing that you're give your elevator speech, Donna Deegan. Let's start with you. 30 seconds, something we don't know about Donna Deegan.
Something you don't know about
me?
Well, that's not an introduction. Something you don't know about me. Okay, I gave my dad a kidney when I was 18. How about that?
Really?
Well,
that's the thing that a lot of people don't know about me.
There you go.
That's the ultimate gesture. Welcome into the studio.
Thank you. That's a great story, Daniel.
Tell us right
off the bat, he tries
to give
me, what do people
one,
not know about you?
I
lived in the public eye my whole life.
There's no way I can top that. That's pretty incredible. And I can't walk by a jar of M&M's without grabbing a handful. How about that?
Peanut or?
Absolutely peanut M&M's.
Can I just say that you have just seen that we have something in common right there?
We have a lot in common.
I cannot also walk by a peanut M&M without grabbing that.
We're all going to go for a run after this. Daniel did about 3 miles this morning, so everyone is ready for questions. April, we've got a lot of ground to cover.
There's
no sense wasting any more time. Let's go ahead and dig in.
Let's do it. So I know you both saw the UNF poll that came out from the Public Opinion Research Lab. And, of course, it shows a close race between the two of you. But also, it asked directly to about 650 likely voters, in your opinion, what is the most important problem facing Jacksonville? You both know crime was the number one answer, 47%. Number two and three, housing costs and education. So we'll start with Donna. What do you think you can do as mayor to address those top concerns?
Well, obviously, you know, on the crime front, I think it's going to be very important to fund additional officers, that we need to make sure we have enough officers on the street so that we can, you know, we have a large population that is growing all the time, so we need enough officers. But we also need to make sure that we're getting underneath the causes of crime. We have a city that over the last 8 years we have seen just mired in a terrible murder rate, 4 times per capita that of New York City. So we have to do more than just put more officers on the streets. We need to make sure that we're investing in intervention and prevention programs. We need to make sure in terms of education that we are investing in literacy programs, because what we know from research is that if a child does not have a literacy by third grade, that very likely they're going to be involved in crime. In fact, 70% of people in our jails are people who have a literacy issue. So education is incredibly important. And of course, 47% of people said crime, 53% said other things like affordable housing. We've got a big affordable housing issue in this city, which is not the same thing as workforce housing, by the way. So we got to make sure that we're tackling those problems as well.
And just for people listening and watching on Facebook or watching on YouTube, this is a forum. This is not a debate. We don't have time limits. We want to have a free and open discussion. So same question to you, Daniel Davis. We are asking about the poll that we just talked about, the top concerns for Jacksonville voters, crime, housing costs, education. What would you do as mayor?
Sure. And Rich and April, thank you so much for having us today. Starting the day off right. And all the listeners out there driving to work, I'm honored to be here. I think Jacksonville got it right in the poll. Everybody is concerned about crime. I've literally stood on thousands of front doors talking to citizens about what's most important to them. And crime comes out more than anything else. But we also know that there are real citizens that are struggling to make ends meet on a monthly basis. And we have to think about how we, as the city, can make sure their costs are lower. When I was on the Jacksonville City Council, I led the charge to bring about 100 new police officers to the streets and put them in the highest crime areas. But we also focused on prevention and intervention methods with the Jacksonville Journey, where we were able to bring the community into City Hall and talk to the city leaders about what they were seeing in the streets. But we also focused on bringing the city leaders out into the community. And crime went down, and you can't argue with that. The numbers are the numbers, and we were able to put the bad guys in jail and keep them there. And we were able to help folks that were prisoners in their own homes be able to take over their neighborhood again. And that's something I'm going to do as your next mayor. I'm going to add 200 new police officers to the street, but that doesn't mean just enforcement. I think enforcement's critically important. It's a triage situation of we have to get men and women in blue in the highest crime areas, but we also need to focus on how we keep children out of the criminal justice system, and that's what we're going to focus on.
You seem to both agree on the Jacksonville journey and some of the elements of it. How far are you both willing to go with bringing back some of those programs, and then where does the money come from in your budget for
it? Listen, while Daniel was on the council, we let go of the Jacksonville journey. I mean, that's the unfortunate part. Why did we let it go? Why did we stop funding it? There has never been a more effective tool that we have had. I've had many conversations with former Sheriff Nat Glover about this because he put in place the community policing component, which frankly is going to be in the hands of the sheriff's office. The sheriff is elected. He gets to decide what kind of policing that we do in the communities. My role as mayor will be largely economic levers and educational levers, but at the end of the day, that program was entirely effective. It was very effective, and we stopped funding it, and the same folks that are running his campaign are the folks that decided to move on from it. So I'm thrilled to bring it back, and we would pay for that the same way that we're going to pay for those extra police officers.
How did it go away, Daniel?
We pay for it with our. I'm sorry. I just want to say we'll pay for it because Jacksonville is a growing city, and we'll pay for it with ad valorem money.
Actually, that's not the case. I was not on the city council at that time. Mayor Alvin Brown dismantled the Jacksonville journey and defunded the police department. And I think if anybody goes back to look to
that's
see what
true.
Times I was on city council and when I was in the Florida legislature, that doesn't match up. But that's okay. We can move on to another question.
Well, no, I don't want to move on because at the end of the day, this is exactly what happens every time. Mayor Alvin Brown was blamed for things that Mayor Alvin Brown didn't do. And so what happens every one of these cycles is that you see the same folks who have run us down the same ruts with crime ask for another turn. And we need to put somebody in charge who sees the entire community, who brings the entire community into the process, and who is committed to not only our police officers, but to our community members. So I'd like to talk about something else, if you don't mind, if we could segue.
I want to give Daniel a chance,
yeah,
so
please,
just respond to that one.
And you have to put a little bit of common sense to this approach. Why would the Fraternal Order of Police, why would former Sheriff John Rutherford, why would current Sheriff T.K. Waters all endorse my campaign if I was responsible for what Ms. Deegan just said?
Daniel, let's be honest.
I didn't interrupt you.
They're Republicans.
I did not interrupt you when you were talking.
There are Republican sheriffs who are supporting a Republican candidate. I get it. It's political theater more than anything else.
I didn't interrupt you when you were talking. And
well, then tell the truth, and I won't have to interrupt you.
Let's have a great conversation. What I would ask the citizens to do that are listening today, do a deep dive on this. Don't take what either one of us are saying as truth. Go do your research and find out who fought to add those 100 new police officers to the streets. Go do your research to find out in 2007, when I was city council president, who led the charge. And I think you're going to find out that I did. Not what I'm going to do, what I did. And you can judge me on my past, knowing that when I tell you I'm going to add 200 new police officers to the streets in the future, you can look back and see what I already did.
Let's move on to the cost of a Jacksonville Journey style return. At the time, it was about $30 million. We'll start with you, Danny. If you do see some elements of it that you want to come back with, do you have a plan? How much does it look like, and where does that money come from? And the same question would go to Donna Deegan.
Sure. I think that there is great opportunity in the city budget. I was finance chair of the Jacksonville City Finance Committee twice when I was on the Jacksonville City Council, youngest city council president in Jacksonville history. And so I have an in-depth knowledge of how the budget works. And I understand there are all sorts of ways that we can fund this priority, if you make it a priority. And I know where the opportunities are to find the dollars to make sure we fund this. It takes about $100,000 per police officer to add to the street. So whenever you think about somebody appropriating, you know, $10 million. You have to think about that in the mindset of, do we really want to spend this money here, or could we add 100 new police officers to the street? And what we're going to do immediately is to dissect the budget, understand the areas of where we can spend money and where we can have restraint. And I am going to have a smaller government. I'm going to have a more government focused on public safety. I'm going to have a government focused on making sure that your livelihood is more affordable and your neighborhood's more affordable. And because of the experience I have, we'll be able to make sure we find every bit of that that dollar concept and make sure that we add it to the streets.
Donna Deegan, with a reboot of some form of Jacksonville journey, and maybe a lingering question might be, do we rebrand it in terms of the community approach and expectation and explanation to the community? How much does it look like? Where do you come with the money for these intervention and prevention programs?
Well, listen, there is some grant money that we can bring down, too, that we've left on the table for some of these things. You can't do that for personnel, but you can do it for some things like training. You can do it for equipment. So there's other monies that we can bring into this equation. But I got to go back to what he was saying about who is responsible for this. I went back and looked at the last two mayoral debates where the Republican sheriff endorsed the Republican candidate for mayor, because this is how it works. They all have the same political consultant. So they're asking us to believe that this same system where we focus singularly on one thing is going to make us safer. And the truth is, what's going to make us safer is better communication between our people and our police, better education, better literacy programs, better intervention and prevention programs, and better training for our police officers. So I'm sorry, but the argument just doesn't hold water. The same folks have been given the same opportunity year after year after year. The same people who will run the city under Daniel Davis are running it now. So if you want the same thing we've had, then keep doing the same thing.
I know you recently had a debate with UNF and Action News Jax, our partners over at Action News Jax. And Daniel, you had said under the sheriff, Waters, that crime is down. And but the number of murders year to date is starting to get on pace with last year. It ended last year with 162 homicides. So is there any acceptable number in that case? And what other crime stats are you using to feel that maybe crime will go down in Jacksonville?
I don't. There's no acceptable rate for a murder rate, and I think that we have to go where the violence is taking place. And by and large, the sheriff and the sheriff's office, they know who is causing and creating this mayhem in neighborhoods. And we have to go in there, and we have to take these folks off the streets and put them in jail. When we do that, crime goes down. And I mentioned earlier, it's a triage situation where we have to make sure we put enough police officers on the street to where when you call 911, your response times are what you would expect. We've had significant growth in this community, and we're going to continue to see growth with all the jobs and the workforce that we've created here. We have to keep pace with the amount of officers that we have on the streets, because it's not fair for people to call and not get a response in a timely manner. And so that's one of the most important things. And I have to tell you, too, I mentioned the other night, there are good, God-fearing people in these neighborhoods that are prisoners in their own homes because bullies are running the streets. On my ride-alongs with the sheriff's office, I've seen it firsthand, and it's not okay. And I would tell you, out of the beach or in Mandarin or in other locations, it's generally a safe place to live. There is crime, but it's not anything like some of the pockets that we have in this community that we really have to focus on and make sure that we're adding new jobs to these communities, that we have the proper infrastructure to where if we bring a manufacturer in, they can at least flush the toilets at their new facility. And that's something as mayor I'm going to focus on. Not leaving any of the communities behind, making sure that everybody feels safe, but everybody has an opportunity for a job and to be able to put food on the table for their families.
Well, he talks about not wanting to leave any of the neighborhoods behind, but the truth is, again, under this same leadership that we have had for the past 8 years, the same neighborhoods that have been promised and promised and promised sidewalks and drainage that works and streets and the infrastructure that does keep neighborhoods safe and makes them more resilient. They've been neglected over and over again. You want to know why a lot of folks don't turn out to vote? It's because they have not had a voice in their government. It's because the same people over and over again promise them, oh, this time is going to be different. I'm going to bring in your neighborhood this time. I'm going to make sure you have those economic opportunities. I'm going to make sure you have that drainage. I met with a bunch of Northside business folks the other day who basically said, you know what? We're trying so hard to keep our heads above water over here. Nobody cares about us. The bottom line is if we're sitting in our business in the dark, underwater, on a street that doesn't get anywhere, it just doesn't do us any good. So the promises are empty when you keep doing the same. You're saying the same stuff that we've heard for the last 8 years. We need change.
But if we're on pace, Donna, with 162 homicides, what would be an acceptable number? What would be an acceptable number after a first year of your administration? If we're on pace for 162, realistically, what does that look like in Jacksonville?
Rich, there are no acceptable homicides, of course. But imagine if we had kept the Jacksonville journey in place. That one thing, that the combination of community policing, such an important piece, of literacy, of food deserts, of the other issues, if we had kept that focus on that very area that is such a hotbed for murders, if we had kept, imagine the lives we could have saved. So it is very, very important that we focus on this, not to the exclusion of everything else in the city, because we have other issues we have to deal with, but these are important issues. And as in a Donna Deegan administration, we can both walk and chew gum at the same time. We will support our police officers. We will also get underneath these causes of violent crime. You have to do both. You have to do both. And you have to provide the infrastructure in the neighborhoods that allow them to feel safe walking their own streets.
Our mayoral candidate spotlight continues in the Farrah & Farrah Performance Studio. April Davis, Rich Jones, our colleague Stephen Ponson from Jacksonville's Morning News has been feverishly going through all of the emails and the open mics that have been coming in the WOKV app, and one that still speaks to crime too, Stephen.
Yeah, Rich. So this next question is for both of you. It's from Barry Schuster, and he says that, what is your program to revitalize the east side at A. Philip Randolph near the Jags Stadium, which he says has a high crime rate in that area and few services for the disadvantaged residents living there?
Let's start with Daniel, since we had Donna had the last word on the other one.
You know, I think that a focus on downtown and a focus on the east side is incredibly important. And we're going to have considerable growth in that area. We're going to see, in my opinion, a new entertainment area in the east side and in the Bay Street area, Bay Street corridor. I'm going to focus on creating an innovation corridor to where entrepreneurs and folks that want to create innovation have an opportunity to test their products in the corridor from the regional transportation center all the way down to the stadium. I know the Jaguars are focused on making sure they have training programs for folks to learn skills and to learn trades in the construction area. And I think that we can take those opportunities and help put people to work. When I was focused on bringing Amazon to town, we had the opportunity to talk to the leadership at Amazon and ask them, hey, would you please do your training, your first job training opportunity at the Legend Center in the Northwest community? And on a hot June afternoon, I walked through and hundreds of people were standing in line to get a job. And it really was an opportunity for us to get every community involved. I'm very proud of that, working with JTA to make sure folks had transportation back and forth to their job. You know, most of us that are either listening right now or in the studio did not pray when they pushed the button on their car or turned their key to start their car. I mean, most of us didn't even think about that today. But what we have to understand is there are thousands of people in this community that are struggling just to hope that their car starts today so they can get to work on time. And those are the folks that we have to really think about from every part of our community, east side, west side, where I grew up, north side, to make sure that they have that transportation. We partnered with JTA to create a shuttle system to where folks that got those jobs knew that they would be able to get there on time and not have an issue with putting food on the table for their families. I'm proud of that.
Donna Deegan, the question specifically about the east side, A. Philip Randolph, near the stadium, which is currently a high-crime area, as Barry points out, few services to the disadvantaged residents. Do you have a specific plan for that area and that neighborhood under your administration?
Yeah, look, you know, one of the things that I have said repeatedly in this campaign is that I want to be the small business mayor. I want to be an engine for small business. And one of the things that we've heard repeatedly from folks over there is the city doesn't even take the time to catalog the businesses in our area. They don't connect us with the same opportunities that the folks in Mandarin or the folks in San Marco get connected to, because they have these community organizations that are so robust. At the end of the day, they deserve to be connected to the same incubator programs, to the same facade grants, to the same types of things that other neighborhoods receive. And that happens when you have an empowered neighborhood that is cataloged in such a way that empowerment happens. But we have to remove the barriers to small business in our city. Our permitting process is a disaster. I've talked to small business people not only on the east side but all over the city who are so frustrated that sometimes it can take them 1, 2, 3 years to even get through the permitting process to begin their business. So I want to remove some of those barriers, and I want Jacksonville to be an engine for small business. But I want the folks in those neighborhoods specifically to know that I see their children as the next CEOs, the next entrepreneurs, even the next Fortune 500 companies, not a problem to be solved. And that is the way our city very often has treated those neighborhoods, a problem to be solved. I'm grateful for places like people like Lyft, who are doing work in that region. I'm so happy that Shad Khan has decided to invest some on the east side. That's all great stuff. That needs to continue, but those folks deserve the same sort of attention as folks in other parts of our city deserve.
We have a lot more ground to cover about neighborhoods and about downtown investment, as well as our conversation continues with mayoral candidates Daniel Davis, Donna Deegan, in the Fair and Farrah Performance Studio. We'll pause for a moment here on 104.5 WOKV.
Back to more of You Decide 2023, the race for Jacksonville mayor. Our special edition of Jacksonville's Morning News continues on 104.5 WOKV. Let's return to the Farrah and Farrah Performance Studio. Here's Rich Jones and April Davis.
Welcome back to the You Decide 2023 Mayoral Forum here on 104.5 WOKV. I'm April Davis alongside Rich Jones, and we are having a conversation, a forum, not a debate, here with the two candidates who will go to a runoff May 16th, Daniel Davis and Donna Deegan. And we have another viewer question we wanted to throw your way.
Yeah, that'll come in. Is we want to just make sure that we remind both of you and everyone out in the community, early voting in person begins on Monday, May 1st, 6 days from today. Turnout overall with mail-in ballots that have been returned to the Duval County Supervisor of Elections as of early this morning, when I looked, at about 4%. There are over 650,000 registered voters in Duval County. The last contested mayoral general election in May in 2015 saw turnout at about 37%. For both candidates, here's your opportunity, and over the next 40-plus minutes, hopefully, an opportunity to bring someone off the sidelines to get involved in the process, no matter who you support. Stephen Ponson has been intercepting a lot of the questions that have come in via email and also open mic. Stephen, what do we got?
This next question comes in from J.S. Totman, who emailed that we desperately need a new Matthews Bridge, which goes all the way to Union and State Street into downtown from the Arlington area, as you know. So what is your plan to address this?
And I'll just pick, this is random, audience, this is random. If you're listening, you're watching on Facebook, or you're watching on YouTube on WOKV's page, let's start with Donna Deegan.
Well, listen, we desperately need a whole lot of infrastructure in this city. You know, we talk about this a lot, but we have a city that is blessed by being on the river, on the ocean, on a number of creeks that are large enough to be called rivers in some areas. And yet, for so many years, we have kicked the can down the road on the infrastructure that we desperately need. The Matthews Bridge is in desperate need, but it's not the only one. We have bridges all over this city that are literally falling into the water, and we have to make sure. I remember before we actually fixed the Fuller-Warren Bridge, the pilings didn't even hit the riverbed anymore. I mean, we've got to be more intentional, especially given what we are seeing coming with our rising seas, and the extreme heat and all those things that we're going to have to be dealing with climate. It's going to be a priority for my administration. In fact, I have a three-pillared plan to move us forward in this city, and the number one pillar in that plan is infrastructure. So I've spoken about this before, but one of the things that we have done, we decided about 20 years ago, and I don't really know why, to stop going after federal funds and state funds to fund a lot of these things. Right now there's a great deal of infrastructure money that is available to bring down to deal with issues like the Matthews Bridge. Great deal of money that we could be going after, and so often we just don't, either because we don't have a strategic plan that is robust enough to justify that, or because we simply have a mentality that we don't want to go get those tax dollars back. Now, some of those federal grants may have too many strings attached and we don't want them, but some really don't, and we need to make sure that we're going after that money. I've spoken with folks who are involved in all manner of infrastructure with this city, and they've said to me, Donna, it literally is in the hundreds of millions of dollars that we leave on the table, and that will be one of the first priorities I have, is let's go get our money back.
Daniel Davis, can you see a change, a need for infrastructure improvements around the Matthews Bridge specifically?
Of course, and I would tell you, I'd have to talk to the DOT about the capacity and the need for a new Matthews Bridge, but that's something that we would always be open to the experts and the engineers on an issue like that. And one point I'd like to make, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier, I had the opportunity to serve 4 years in the Florida legislature, and the relationships you create when you're in Tallahassee, understanding how important the nexus between the city of Jacksonville and our state capital is, especially for infrastructure funding. And the next four Senate presidents I entered into the Florida House with, and they're dear friends of mine. The next four speakers of the House are closely connected to Northeast Florida. And there is a time that we are going to have in Northeast Florida where we, if we plan properly, and we know what our requests are, and we as a community go to Tallahassee and ask for the appropriate infrastructure dollars, we're going to have a unique opportunity to land our lion's share of infrastructure improvements in this community. And we've been successful in the past. And so I'm looking forward to that opportunity. And the listener out there, when you're considering who your next CEO of this city is going to be, understand that it's important that your next CEO has incredible relationships with the folks that actually decide where those infrastructure dollars are going to go. And I'm very, very close to the folks in the Senate and in the House.
So basically what Daniel is telling you is that it has to be the same old establishment folks that we have had here in government for the last 20 years that have left us in the same ruts that we've been in. I just have to keep coming back to that. I have wonderful relationships with members of our Duval delegation. And just to be clear, we both have been CEOs of nonprofit organizations, okay? And the job in my mind of a CEO, which I think our views of what a CEO does may be a little bit different. To me, the best CEOs are people who can vision forward, who can build the team, put the right people on the bus to bring that vision in for a landing, and who have the communication skills to be able to bring the people in and to bring that vision to fruition. And I absolutely have always done that. I have a lot of experience doing that, and I will do that as your next mayor. There is absolutely nothing he has in terms of relationship with people in Tallahassee that would make him any more likely to be able to bring that in than I would. I have great relationships on that front, too.
Daniel?
I don't know if she understands how the Florida Capitol works.
I covered it for 40 years, I guess I do.
There's no teleprompters in the state or
city
hall.
And I don't use them when I'm covering
the leadership in the Florida legislature, when you have supermajorities in the Florida House and in the Florida Senate, it's critically important that you have the right relationships with the folks that actually decide how you spend the money, not the folks that are sitting on the back benches. I hope the city of Jacksonville understands that importance, and there's a unique difference. There's nothing wrong with creating good relationships. I've spent 26 years creating relationships not only in Jacksonville but in Tallahassee, and it's incredibly important for us to see our biggest advantage would be the folks that we can contact in Tallahassee to make sure we bring those infrastructure dollars home.
I want you to pay attention basically to what he just said about the supermajority in the state legislature. I think we have seen the perils of having a supermajority of any one party in government, and we've certainly seen that locally as well. Over the past 8 years, we've basically been a supermajority of one party. And I've got to tell you, from my perspective, that is a weakness. If he is truly going to be a mayor for everybody, like I have said, I want to bring everybody in. I will have Democrats, Republicans, and Independents in my administration. Because if we do not start bringing everybody in, we cannot move this city forward. I'll use my veto pen, if I have to stop these same sweetheart deals and these same good old boy deals, these same crony deals that he is so famous for. That we cannot any longer have in this city. So it's not, look, you can't, please do not be held hostage by the false argument that if he's buddies with the guys in Tallahassee that have been running this state and the folks in this city, look, we got to have a change. 68% of folks out there say they want change, and they want change because we've had one party that has been, frankly, doing a lot of back dealing, the same party that tried to steal our JEA. We got to have other voices in the room aside from just the one supermajority.
And I would tell you, look at where everyone in this country is moving to. There is mass migration taking place across our country. And you have liberal climates that are defunding the police, putting community activists in charge, creating chaos. Police officers are leaving those communities and moving to conservative communities where you actually love the police for keeping you safe. Businesses in mass migration are moving out of liberal climates that overtax and create too much red tape so they can move to a free place where they can thrive. Why is Florida seeing this happen? Because you have a supermajority of folks that are giving freedom to these job creators and taxpayers, and they're leaving these environments that are restrictive and think government's the solution. Yeah. I mean, we can talk about this all day long. But
Right. People, we could, people, but we don't have all
people
day.
Are,
but listen, I do have to respond to something that you said. Because this whole idea, again, of setting up my side good, your side bad, that does not bring us together. This man has spent millions of dollars first lying about his Republican opponents and then lying about me. I am a person who has spent my entire life and five generations before me in this community. I love our police officers just like I love our community members. I've been to more murder scenes and been on more ride-alongs than you will ever go on in your entire life. I know what a dangerous job it is to police. But at the end of the day, you know what we also have a commitment to? To accountability to our community. Anybody who gets taxpayer dollars in this city should be held accountable. And for him to go on television and say things about me that are not true, like the fact that just because I have said we should have a look at a citizen review board, there are 11 cities in this state that have citizen review boards. And you know what? Let me finish this. In 2017, the state Supreme Court said you cannot have a citizen review board that has any sort of authority over police. Yet he continues to run an ad lying, saying that I am trying to take charge of the police. No, I'm not. I'm simply trying to give our citizens a voice. And in the communities where that has happened, there has been a 15% reduction in arrests of black citizens, and there has been an increased trust with police. What we're trying to do here is have a safer community. So stop with the stale rhetoric and the talking points and the lies and tell people the truth. Your way hasn't worked. Stop trying to scare people into submission, Daniel. Let's try to bring some unity to this community and stop telling people that one side is good and one side is bad.
So
all I would tell you is they're your words.
They're your words. You're the one that's running the ads. Can you take responsibility for the ads you're running?
You say that you want to hold the police officers accountable.
I want to hold everybody accountable.
I'm not interrupting you when you're talking.
Okay, go ahead.
You say you want to keep police officers accountable. As mayor, I want the citizens to know I'm holding the criminals accountable, and I'm going to give the support to our men and women in blue who put their lives on the line every day. So that's the distinct difference. I'm not lying about anything. They're your words on TV saying you want to hold the police accountable.
Daniel, we still have a lot of ground to cover.
But this is such an important point, Rich, because he's making this the centerpiece of his campaign, as every candidate before him on that side of the aisle has done. And it hasn't made us safer. I have talked with so many police officers who have said this rhetoric he's putting out there doesn't make us safer. Let's talk about things that can make us safer and stop with the hyperbole and the political theater. That's all I'm saying.
We do have a lot more ground to cover. We still actually have time, which is why we dedicated an entire hour to this forum in the Fair and Farrah Performance Studio. I want to thank April Davis, Stephen Ponson, you for listening and your attention on YouTube and Facebook. Donna Deegan and Daniel Davis, stand by as we dive deeper into issues around neighborhoods and infrastructure and even the future of a Jaguar Stadium in downtown Jacksonville. As our coverage of You Decide 2023 continues, early voting begins Monday, May 1st, Election Day in Duval County is May 16th. WOKV News Time, 8:41.
Back to more of You Decide 2023, the race for Jacksonville mayor. Our special edition of Jacksonville's morning news continues on 104.5 WOKV. Let's return to the Farrah and Farrah Performance Studio. Here's Rich Jones and April Davis.
I do appreciate your time and attention throughout any platform that you're listening, watching, and I was just mentioning to our candidates, Donna Deegan and Daniel Davis, in the break. 104.5 WOKV is the one resource for all of this information on the election with our voter guide at WOKV.com. But April, Cox Media Group is 8 radio stations and 2 TV stations here in Northeast Florida, CBS 47 and Fox 30 Action News Jack. So we're trying to, and that's why we wanted to bring both candidates in for a forum to cover as much ground as we can on the issues that matter most in Northeast Florida and specifically in the city of Jacksonville.
That's right. We got you covered here with with every demographic listening. So we're excited to have both candidates here. The runoff will be May 16th. So we want to give them one last chance to be together and have a conversation before you head to the polls. So let's get started with some discussion about the Jaguars. Go Jags! They had a great season. But of course, we want them to stay here. So we want to talk about a stadium lease. And so, Daniel, you said in last week's debate with UNF and Action News Jacks that the process would be public and transparent. Do you plan to hold public meetings, have community representatives in those negotiations? And if you push for transparency, would you be open to news coverage?
Absolutely. I think that that's incredibly important. And I think that we have to make sure that we have a transparent conversation about what are the next steps with the stadium. One good thing about the stadium is we've had engineers look at the bones and the infrastructure of the stadium. And we have seen that the stadium's bones are good. So we wouldn't have to tear down the entire facility. We could renovate, and it would save about $600 million, my estimates in the conversations that I've had as we go into this conversation. And I think it's critically important that the citizens understand everything about it. This last year was incredibly fun to cheer the Jags on. I mean, I think Don and I agree. We love the Jags. I mean, that's super important, and it's important for Jacksonville. We're one of 32 cities that have an NFL team, and that's incredible. And we have to do everything we can to make sure that we come up with a long-term lease to move the Jaguars here for the long term and just discontinue the conversation about the Jags possibly moving. But what I would say as well is we have to make sure that when we're negotiating this long-term deal, that we negotiate on behalf of the citizens, and that's what I'm going to do. And I've said that time and time again, that when I go into the negotiation table, I'm going to make sure we have a fair and transparent long-term deal with the Jags. It's going to be open conversation with the community, and it's going to be something that the citizens can be a part of and can participate in. And then the other thing I would tell you is everybody has to have skin in the game on this issue. We can't give away the store. And there's a point where you say, listen, this is a no deal for the citizens of Jacksonville. I don't think we're going to get there, but we have to have that open conversation, and I look forward to that process.
Donna, before the March 1st election, you had told us on the same stage in the Fair and Farrah Performance Studio, cha-ching, that you wouldn't negotiate a lease extension here. You also said that on stage last week at the Action News Jacks debate. Mm-hmm. You got to have a percentage that's kind of like a red line for what taxpayers should expect to fund. While maybe not putting a dollar, is there a percentage? And I want to follow up with Daniel on that point as well. What's the percentage that taxpayers should expect to pay for stadium upgrades? You have to have some red line.
Look, Rich, I'm going to say the same thing to you that I said then, and I'm sorry that that's not an acceptable answer to you, but I think it's important that you don't start negotiating these deals in front of these deals. I think what's going to be very important, and I said this at the debate the other night, we need to make sure that we are bringing in the best negotiators who are used to negotiating with the NFL on deals of this type. You know, Daniel can say that he wants to make sure that he's negotiating on behalf of the taxpayers, but he was ready to give away the Lot J deal that had basically no return on investment because he was so anxious to please the Jaguars. Look, I want the Jaguars to stay. I believe they will stay. I have had a meeting with Shad Khan recently where we talked extensively about this whole idea of investment in community and what all of that looks like. I think he wants to be a part of the renaissance of this city. I do believe that. And we have a lot of things that he could get involved in, just like he's getting involved in with the East Side. But in terms of this stadium negotiation, I do think that there's a lot of agreement in terms of there has to be skin in the game from everybody. There has to be some from the city. There has to be some from the NFL. There has to be some from Mr. Khan. But I think it would be irresponsible to stand here right now or sit here right now and to say to you, here's the percentage that's my red line. I don't think that's good negotiating practice, and I'll make sure we put the best negotiators in the room to make sure that we get the best deal for the citizens of Jacksonville. What we have seen over the past 8 years is a willingness to open the wallet and say, take whatever you want. And the truth is, I'm going to say it again because people need to know. The very same people that are leading Lenny Curry's administration are leading his administration. So if you feel like this administration has been your voice, if you feel like it's working for you, he's your guy.
Daniel, is there a number, is there a percentage that you're willing to say, commit to right now that this would be too far for taxpayers?
You don't show your hand before you step up to negotiate. That we're not doing that. There is a point where you say, no, this is a no deal. That's something that we as a community have to come to grips with. And I would tell you this, I'm not going to bring in negotiators from outside of Jacksonville to negotiate. You are hiring me to be your next CEO. I am going to negotiate on your behalf. And if you look at some of these deals across the country that I don't know what negotiators that Don is talking about, but they're not great deals for the community. I'm going to focus on representing the taxpayers when I step up to the negotiation table, and I'm not going to say up front what I'm willing to do or what I'm willing to provide, because that's a bad negotiation tactic, and I'm not going to walk down that road.
Okay, we're going to try to get this in before we have to wrap up here, and we'll have you have one final comment, but we want to talk about pensions, because Police and Fire Pension Fund actually topped $2.6 billion in October of 22. According to a draft analysis, and then pension debt jumped by more than $280 million, requiring the city to pay $171 million in the next budget. So where will you find money without raising taxes to pay for this? We'll start with Donna.
So you're asking me about, I'm sorry, I'm confused about the question. Are you asking about whether we're going to go back to a pension? Is that what you're asking about?
Well, they new police and firefighters have a 401k style program.
Right.
So, yes, what would be the pension plan
for? Okay, so
yes.
Look, you know, we got ourselves into this mess because we failed to invest in our pension. And that was, again, during the years that Daniel was on the city council. We failed to invest in the pension that we had. So what happened was when you fail to plan, you plan to fail, right? And so we come with this deal that, because we desperately needed infrastructure. Look, we got to invest in infrastructure. Let's create this new plan. So bottom line is, I don't believe long-term it's going to be the answer for our city. I think if we want to retain the best talent for police and fire, and look, job number one for a mayor is the health and safety of the city. So what's going to happen if we continue down this path that we really, you know, again, we created for ourselves with the same folks that are going to lead his organization. If we continue down that same path, we're going to lose police officers. We're going to lose firefighters because the retention will be a problem. So the question you asked is, how are we going to pay for it? So one of the things that we may have to look at is do we just create a situation where we put people in the FRS system, the Florida retirement system, going forward? You know, the deal that we created before was with a certain number of police officers, right? We might have to look at doing it that way. But there, at some point, you can't kick the can down the road on this forever. It's going to be, there's going to be some pain involved. But I do think at the end of the day, we're going to have to go back, or at least look seriously at going back to a defined benefit. I don't have a timetable on that, but I think it's something we're going to have to look at if we want to retain the best and the brightest.
And Daniel, would you consider rolling them into the Florida retirement system?
I love how you know who I'm going to hire in the mayor's office.
Well, they're all with you, dude.
It's really, really interesting. And I would tell you this. When I was on the city council, the economy was it was tanking, and Jacksonville was ground zero for the economic collapse. And I'm proud of the fact that we were able to bridge hundreds of millions of dollars during that time to make sure the unfunded liability of the city's pension, that our men and women in blue and our firefighters always had the dollars that they were promised. And I hear from police and fire on a regular basis about this idea of us training, recruiting the best, and then anecdotally we're seeing these candidates either go back to their hometowns or go to surrounding counties. And that's something we definitely have to look at as a community. As the CEO of the chamber, I had to reassess how I compensate my employees and the retirement of my employees, because it's much cheaper to keep our employees than to go find more, recruit more, train more, and bring in. I'm going to bring that same attitude to the city of Jacksonville. We will be data-driven. We will understand, is this for real? Is this really happening? Or is it something that people feel like is happening? So we're going to make decisions based on data. I would tell you that I have said all options are on the table. There's not a city pension that I would be willing to bring back. I would be willing to look at a state FRS pension if that's something that is data proven, and I would be willing to make sure that we retain the best and the brightest. So we have to recruit, we have to train, and then retain them. But it's all going to be data driven, and it's going to be revenue neutral when I'm mayor.
The University of North Florida poll that was released last week showed 5% of undecideds among likely registered voters. And the reality, according to data from the Supervisor of Elections office, is anywhere between 30 and 40% turnout for May 16th election, with early voting beginning May 1st. I'll give you both 30 seconds. We'll start with you, Daniel. Your closing message to anyone who's on the sidelines and looking at this race, convince them to come vote for you in 30 seconds.
Listen, I love my city. I grew up here. All I've wanted to do is serve my city. And when you're choosing who the next CEO of this city should be, you need to consider the volume of experience that I have and that I bring to the table, the relationships that I've created over the 26 years that I've served this community. And I would ask you on May 16th to vote for me. We'll be able to hit the ground running day one, and this is not an on-the-job learning situation. Thank you very much.
Daniel, thanks. Donna Deegan, with 30 seconds left. You got 5% people undecided right now. Can you convince them in 30 seconds, perhaps, to come your way?
Listen, 68% of the people in a recent poll said they want change. I'm your change candidate. If you want what we've always had, if you want the same people, the same corrupt folks who brought us the JEA deal, put this guy in office. If you want change and somebody who will really bring this entire city together, I'm all about unity. I'm not running ugly attack ads like he is. I'm about unity and bringing this city together. We both have been nonprofit leaders. I am happy that my focus has been on the people of this city, and it will continue to be on the people of this city when I'm the mayor and I ask for your vote.
Wherever you're listening or watching, you have a choice to make, but it's your choice to make. And if you're one of the 650,000 registered voters, you got to get off your duff and do it. And time is running out. May 1st, early voting. May 16th, the election.
Yeah, we want to say thank you, Donna Deegan. Thank you, Daniel Davis, for joining us. And don't forget to vote. The runoff is coming up on May 16th. Thank you for listening to 104.5 WOKV, to this You Decide 2023 Mayoral Forum.